Chapter 13. The Man Comes Around. The enforced seclusion at Old Hickory Lake was not to Cash's liking. He wasn't officially housebound, but travel presented fresh difficulties, and he had more and more doctor appointments to keep. He'd spent most of his adult life on the road, with his musicians as a surrogate family and his tour bus as a home away from home. Moving from city to city suited his restless nature. Basking in the applause of the crowd was a safe and controllable form of intoxication. "It gives me a high like none you can get," he said in 1988. As Cash the Man slowed, so did Cash the business. The Johnny Cash Museum shut its doors in 1995, and now, with Cash off the tour, talk of selling the House of Cash began. The payroll that once listed over 40 people now ran in single figures. In January 1998, Carl Perkins died after suffering a series of strokes. In June, Helen Carter died at the age of 70. Just over a year later, Anita Carter died at the age of 66. "It depresses him," Roseanne said at the time. "He's not used to sitting around. He's a very powerful person, and not to feel well, that's really hard for him. He spent over 40 years on the road, and suddenly he's not there. When that energy comes to a screeching halt, there's a lot to deal with just inside yourself." Perhaps he could have managed a single illness, but almost every part of his body decided to rebel at the same time. His asthma only compounded the chronic obstructive pulmonary disorder in his lungs. His jaw remained a constant source of pain, and his stomach regurgitated food. Partially deaf in his left ear and partially blind from glaucoma, he suffered also from damaged nerve endings and abscessed feet. It's difficult to say whether Cash's years of drug abuse contributed to his ailments. Anecdotal evidence suggests that there may be a connection between heavy amphetamine use and diabetes in later life. Some family members thought he'd been over-medicated for years, and others thought that he'd been operated on more than necessary. Neither of his parents had suffered ill health at his age, now 66, and both had lived well into their 80s. He insisted that years of hard work on the road, not the drugs, wore out his body. "Maybe I did wear myself out, but it was to a good purpose. They, the pundits, should be thankful that I wore it out, writing and recording and touring and doing concerts." As Cash's faculties declined, public and professional acclaim for his work increased. People seemed to realize that they may not have many more chances to tell him face to face just what an exceptional contribution he had made to music. In December 1996, Cash received a Kennedy Center Lifetime Achievement Award. Vice President Al Gore nominated Cash for the award that honored his body of work for revealing the entire range of existence, failure and recovery, entrapment and escape, weakness and strength, loss and redemption, life and death. In February 1998, Unchained won the Grammy for Best Country Album, and the following year, the Recording Academy gave him the Grammy's Lifetime Achievement Award. It was in 1998 that he first had discussions about making a movie of his life story called Walk the Line. He approached James Keach, movie producer husband of Jane Seymour, who had first met him when he and June had guest starred on Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman and had grown to be a close friend. "John said that he'd like me to be involved because he didn't trust the intentions of most people in Hollywood," says Keach. "He wanted a film that wasn't just sex and drugs and rock and roll, but his journey as a man and his love with June and the fact that God was at the core of his story." An original script by Gil Dennis, written in close consultation with Cash, was eventually sold to Sony with director James Mangold and his producer wife Kathy Conrad attached to the project, but was put into turnaround and then picked up by Fox 2000. Production started in 2004 with Joaquin Phoenix playing Cash and Reese Witherspoon as June. In April 1999, the industry gathered at Hammerstein Ballroom in New York for the all-star tribute to Johnny Cash. Many of Cash's closest friends and greatest admirers in the business sang their choice of his songs. Filmed highlights included performances by U2, "Don't Take Your Guns to Town," Bruce Springsteen, "Give My Love to Rose," and Bob Dylan, "Train of Love." Cash watched the show offstage on TV monitors, but after Tim Robbins read the liner notes to Johnny Cash at Folsom Prison, the honoree graced the audience with both "Folsom Prison Blues" and "I Walk the Line." In 2001, President George W. Bush presented him the National Medal of Arts. Being off the road did have its benefits. Johnny now had the time to focus on creating music. He had found a large part of his identity in being a performing artist, and now he had to rediscover it as a recording artist. His relationship with Rick Rubin reinvigorated him. He derived great pleasure from researching songs to record in the future, and he enjoyed sending CDs to Rubin for his opinion. He recorded in his cabin where, through the window, he could watch the goats, deer, and peacocks wandering among the trees. His son, John Carter, would join him and make suggestions. He, along with Cash's son-in-law, Jimmy Tittle, would both work on all the American recording sessions, John Carter as an associate producer and Tittle as production assistant. Periodically, Rubin would fly in from L.A. to monitor their progress. Thoughts of sin and redemption preoccupied him less during the building of this album, possibly because he had left the arena of his greatest temptations. Spending so much time sick and at home, Cash was not so easily tempted by the lusts of the flesh. They, the demons, don't come knocking on a regular basis, he admitted. They just kind of hover in the distance. Instead, he became preoccupied with the transience of life and the consciousness of mortality. The subject even crept into the songs he dredged from his memory, songs he used to sing to his girlfriends back in Dias, like "That Lucky Old Sun." Oh, Lord above, don't you hear me crying? Tears are rolling down my eyes. Send in a cloud with a silver lining. Take me to paradise. Show me that river. Take me across. Wash all my troubles away. Like that lucky old sun, give me nothing to do but roll around heaven all day. For the same album, Rubin chose more contemporary songs like Neil Diamond's Solitary Man, Tom Petty's defiant I Won't Back Down, and Nick Cave's somber The Mercy Seat, which told the story of an execution from the point of view of the condemned man. In Cash's hands, The Mercy Seat became not only a song of compassion for those facing the electric chair, but the testimony of anyone under a death sentence. And the mercy seat is waiting, and I think my head is burning. And in a way I'm yearning to be done with all this measuring of truth. An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. And anyway, I told the truth, and I'm not afraid to die. The process of collecting material infused Cash's creative juices. He wrote three new songs, co-wrote another, and co-adapted a fourth. It's the first time I've ever had them bombard my brain like that, he told Rolling Stone. I hadn't written for more than a year since I got sick, but when I started recording, the ideas started coming. Again, the songs depicted endings, departures, transitions. The last verse of Wayfaring Stranger, a song from an 1858 hymnal, summed up his situation. I know dark clouds will hang round me. I know my way is rough and steep. Yet beauteous fields lie just before me, where God's redeemed their vigils keep. I'm going there to see my mother. She said she'd meet me when I come. I'm only going over Jordan. I'm only going over home.